You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle, and here are today's topics. Liverpool wins the 2022 EFL Cup final. Phil Foden's late winner for City overshadowed by a controversial handball by Rodri. Leeds part ways with Marcelo Bielsa after defeat to Spurs at Elland Road. Man United are held goalless at Old Trafford, and West Ham picks up a massive 3 points in the race for the top four. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode.
Good stuff, mate. And obviously, we want to get into the football, but I think first it'd be wrong of us not to at least talk about the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the scenes and the feeling we had around the English Premier League and Premier League clubs this weekend. There was a lot of support for the Ukrainians, with flags, with support, with people clapping and supporting. And certainly some of the players, Rob, when you think of certainly the Everton-Manchester City game, Alexander Zinchenko, Vitaly Mykolenko, sort of embracing on the halfway line, very emotional with tears both in their eyes and a thought towards, you know, what's happening in their country, family and friends, and they must be, you know, you can't even bear to think what must be going through their minds as these players face this really, really difficult time.
Yeah, I thought that the hug was particularly touching, Rob, of all the things that we saw. And then the tears in the eyes of Zinchenko every time the camera seemed to go on to him was probably the strongest image of it. But throughout the weekend, Rob, the players coming out with flags around them, players coming out with the T-shirts on, you know, bunch of fans with all the holding the flags up in certain sections of certain stadiums around the Premier League. So obviously a incredibly sad situation we're experiencing right now, but football, as ever, will react to it. You know, the fans will, and the clubs will get behind players involved, and the Ukrainian players, of course, that we've talked about in the Premier League. Yarmolenko as well, West Ham United, Rob, has been allowed some time off.
Yeah, Declan Rice had his shirt, didn't he, today, which I thought was a really nice touching touch for the West Ham and the captain.
Yeah. Also in the news, Rob, real quick, is the is Chelsea Football Club.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, Roman Abramovich, we know, is the owner of this club. Has been the owner for many, many years.
Yeah.
Seemed to be increased scrutiny, Rob, given this invasion by Putin and alleged links in the past to the Russian leader. The club came out, the owner actually, Abramovich, did come out with a statement.
Yeah, he came out with a statement yesterday. And what I would say, Rob, before I just read the statement, it's very rare for Abramovich to say anything in the media in the 20 years virtually that he's been in charge. But yesterday he did come out and he said, during my 20-year ownership of Chelsea FC, I have always viewed my role as a custodian of the club, whose job it is to ensure that we are successful as we can be today, as well as build for the future, while playing a positive role in our communities. I've always taken decisions with the club's best interest at heart. I remain committed to these values. That's why I'm going to be giving the trustees of Chelsea's charitable foundation the stewardship, and that's a really important word, the stewardship and care of Chelsea FC. I believe that they are currently in the best position to look after the interests of the club, players, staff, and fans. So that came out yesterday, Rob, and I think the thought was many people were just saying, is this a safe place for Abramovich to put the football club, maybe distance himself from at the moment and take a little bit of the heat out of the situation?
Well, that's what he's trying to do, Rob. I mean, obviously, he still is the owner of the club. There's nothing changed there, just the stewardship is being attempted to be handed over. We're not sure. There's some reports today that the charitable foundation is not certain they can actually legally do that, and that will be an ongoing situation. A further club statement On the conflict in Ukraine, Rob, I'll read out real quick and short is, you know, it just says here, the situation in Ukraine is horrific and devastating. Chelsea Football Club's thoughts are with everyone in Ukraine. Everyone at the club is praying for peace. Now, we don't want to get into the details of these statements and what they mean. There's plenty of MPs in the UK that are involved in this and are hinting at stuff that's not been said in these statements that they want to hear from Roman Abramovich.
I think they're wanting him to take this further to make bigger statements than are being made at the moment. And this is going to be a very much fluid, ongoing situation, Rob, with Chelsea, high-profile London club, very much in the spotlight. And I'm sure there's going to be more news on that, which we will monitor as we move along. Mm. So obviously, we'll keep our eyes open for that. And, you know, I just think let's send our best wishes to everybody out in Ukraine and hope there's an end to this very quickly.
Yeah, it's a tough transition, Rob, back to football. Yeah. And also back to Chelsea Football Club. Mm. They lost out in the League Cup final. We've just finished watching it to Liverpool in a pretty extraordinary day, actually. Where you think about the game, you think about the penalty situation, you think about some of the stuff that we saw, some of the shots, some of the chances, some of the saves, and the penalties going right through to the goalkeeper. It was an extraordinary game of football. I mean, just in big picture stuff, I can't remember seeing a cup final or a game, particularly involving two giants of the game, Rob, with brilliant players, with so many chances.
And so not, open, not even
but amazing chances, like through on goal, and there's nobody else around, and they still didn't manage to score, and some brilliant goalkeeping.
Yeah.
We have goalkeeping stuff that we'll talk about a little later in this chat, Rob, but the goalkeeping of Mendy.
Yeah,
who was brilliant, Kepa, and then he's subbed out for Kepa, who's got this record. But I mean, just give me some of your thoughts, Rob, on the actual game before we get to the penalty stuff.
Chelsea started the game better. I thought created opportunities. Pulisic looked dangerous. That front three with Mount in for Ziyech. There was no Romelu Lukaku. That was you know the big news. We debated whether he wouldn't. He didn't start him. He started with Havertz, Mount, and Pulisic, who caused problems early on. And my first takeaway is that if one of the things about this Chelsea team, and certainly probably more pertinent to the attack, they've got to get killer inside the 18-yard box. Killer inside the 18-yard box puts them possibly 2-0 ahead. And I know Liverpool had chances, and I know the game opened up. But the Pulisic chance that comes across early, he should finish. He should finish that, Rob. He should go across the keeper with one touch, killer, and find the back of net. Mo Salah-style killer. Mason Mount breaks through from midfield and has a shot. He can readjust his body. He's not got to go for power. He's just got to redirect. He's got to have killer. He's got to have killer instinct. If he's going to get 10-plus goals a season, and Chelsea are going to compete for titles. There's that part of the game, I would say, with that front three, and that possibly includes Lukaku at times, that stands out as a difference between City team, Liverpool's team, and Chelsea's team.
I mean, there's so many chances, Rob. It's even difficult at the end of it to think back at who had the most great... I mean, there's so many great chances. I mean, Liverpool had brilliant chances as well. We expect them to
finish. Yeah, but we know Liverpool will take chances on a regular basis, the top scorers in the league. One of Chelsea's big issues, and we've talked about it, is goals around the team and the mentality of the goals around the team. And that's the point I'm trying to make there, that there's got to be there's got to be a change of mentality. Mason Mount has got to become a Frank Lampard-esque killer when he's in the box and find the back of the net.
I thought that Mount's chances were much easier than Pulisic's, actually. I know what you're saying, and I know what you mean about the killer finishing. I thought it came across pretty quickly. I thought he got a good contact on it.
That's interesting. I would have preferred Pulisic's chance than the other two. Because he's that much on the ball, Rob. I don't have to do anything with that ball but redirect it.
I just thought it came across pretty quickly. I thought, you know, he just kind of readjusted himself.
The ball helps you because now you're just angling your foot and you're just diverting it. You know, you don't have to do anything else. You don't have to kick through it or aim it. You just got to sort of glick it away from the keeper.
Even when Mount goes through and everybody's waiting for him to score, there's nobody around him and he gets it a little bit caught under his feet and hits the post.
Yeah, I mean, he's got to take a touch. He's got to be a little bit more composed, but... I mean, listen, we're splitting hairs on. There was chances. I think the point is made about what, you know, they've got to become more killer instinct in around that box. But, you know, then Liverpool came into it and started to play well. And I thought Luis Diaz, again, is a gift that's going to keep growing for Liverpool. He's understanding, his intelligence, his link-up play with his teammates after such a short time. I think it was a big day for him, Rob, and we'll talk about, obviously, the result. But I thought at the end, coming to a football club, a few weeks away, and he's won something already. He's won. He's been part of a winning group already.
Mm. No, it's got to feel good. And the scenes afterwards with the team collecting the trophy and the manager, you know, I'm sure it's amazing. Unfortunately, I was in that situation three times and lost every time. So I don't know what it feels like to lift a trophy. But it's, you know, just switching back to Chelsea, Rob, just we talk about the forward play, and I totally agree. It's a good point about the ruthless nature of the finishing of Chelsea you need to find. I still thought that the front three enjoyed playing with each other, Rob. I think that, and of course, take out the chances that should have been scored. Some of the combination play, some of the chances created with Havertz and Pulisic, I thought was bright again in that in his favourite little position behind the striker. Mason Mount missed his chances. So, yes, of course, the finishing was not good enough. But I still kind of like that front three a little more than when you see Lukaku there, who came into the game later on, took his penalty well at the end. But I think the manager will probably stick with these three for a little while until Ziyech comes back, because I think Chelsea look a little more lively, better movement with those three up there than Lukaku and others.
Does that start to cause? I mean, listen, we've talked about Chelsea Football Club and being under the spotlight for other reasons, but does that? I wouldn't say cause a problem, but does that allow everybody to keep saying every week spend $100 million on Lukaku and he's only sitting on the bench? Does that keep coming up? Does that negative? Will that negativity?
Yeah.
Be anchored to the club and can be a bit of a weight all of a sudden on the team, because then the front three are playing better and look more fluid and, as you say, seem like they enjoy playing together. But then they've got to keep scoring, because then it's like, well, when's Lukaku going to get his chance? How long is he going to sit there and be patient? Is at some point you're going to blow up and then say, right, if I'm not playing, I want to get out of here? Just not a good situation for Chelsea.
It's not. Do you think, Rob, and this is all assuming that Chelsea finish the season pretty well.
Yeah.
And there's no real drama and they finish wherever they're going to finish, third or whatever, and they have a good run at the Champions League. And Thomas Tuchel is set to stay on.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting to see what Lukaku does between now and the end of the season. If he gets another run in the team, Rob, which I'm sure he will, run in the team as a number nine, and we see a similar type of performance, he'll come off if he's not doing the business.
Yeah.
Could we see him leave in the summer? Would it make sense, assuming that Tuchel's going to stay on with the same style and approach?
Yeah.
And would it? I feel like that would be a reasonable outcome. Sell, get plenty of money and go in a different direction. Is that possible?
Absolutely. I think so. I think if the money's right, I think Chelsea are that kind of football club. They'll do it with managers. They do it with players. If you don't matter how big you are, it's not quite happening for you, they'll move you on. I think they'll try and get, you know, as much of the money back that they can. In this market, that might be more difficult. But yeah, I think it's a good point. I think both Romelu has to decide, does he want to stick out at Chelsea and continue to have to prove himself to a certain point? Or does the manager feel that he wants to stay with Lukaku and see if he can be the missing piece and work with him to integrate him better in the side? You know, two big personalities at the football club, two big characters. I don't think at this stage of Lukaku's career, Rob, and there's a World Cup coming up at the end of this year, that he's going to be happy in and out of a team, kind of not really leading a line. And then you're going to go to Belgium and be the main man? It just feels awkward.
Let me just throw this in as well, Rob, something I read from a former teammate of mine before we get to Liverpool and the penalty stuff for the goalkeeper situation. Just on Lukaku, before we move on, Fabrizio Ravanelli, a big Italian striker, played for Juventus, won the Champions League, national team player, played with us for some seasons over Middlesbrough in England, of course. I read a quote from him about Lukaku saying he's mentally weak, psychologically weak. He struggled with criticism at Man United, wanted out. He's struggling with the pressure and the expectations at Chelsea, and he's not doing it. He's mentally weak. I mean, very, very strong from Fabrizio. Is there something in that, Rob, where he, if he's not the top man and things aren't going for him, then he'll find excuses, or he'll sulk a little bit, or you won't get a fighting look out. I mean, it seems very strong and harsh for me, but it does make you think, well, Man United, why didn't it work out? If he's that great a player, why wasn't he popular? Why didn't he, you know, maybe do better and score more goals than we thought? And why is he not
popular? I think that's a difficult. Popular. What's popular mean? What do you mean by popular with the fans, popular with the players? I don't know.
I think what I mean by popular, nobody was bothered about him leaving, Rob. United. Nobody bothered about, I mean, it wasn't a big story that he was going to leave the football club. He never hid it off there, Rob.
I don't probably take that. Only that, listen, he's played at top class football in a number of teams. He was a kid coming in at Everton, West Brom. We've seen at Manchester United. He's been into Milan, was very successful in the right setup. And maybe that's what Ravinelli's trying to say. The setup's right and things are built around him. He can be $1 million, but maybe not.
When it's not.
You could say that. I could possibly say that of a number of strikers. Certainly in the Premier League and across leagues all around Europe and the world, at certain situations he looked great, other times he looked... Sebastian Allaire couldn't hit a barn door and all of a sudden he goes to Ajax and scores loads of goals. Is he mentally weak or is it a setup?
Well, I think it's a combination of the Man United experience and the Chelsea experience. That's where he's
The two. I mean, but then you can't leave out the Inter experience where he was excellent, where his game developed, where he was fit and focused. Listen, I'm not saying he doesn't, he maybe needs handling a certain way. And that's very true of many, many players, top ones from Ronaldo's down to lower league. And centre forwards are a very, very different breed. We've all played with them. Some you've got to cajole, keep your arm over because they'll get your goals. Some you've got to give a bit of a rocket to and get under them. I think at times, and the Ravinelli, I think he becomes an easy target, Lukaku. I think people like you could. I don't particularly see anybody saying Harry Kane's mentally weak when he wasn't scoring goals in the first half of the season. Oh, we had the move, and that was playing on his mind and all that stuff. But I'm a bit uncomfortable with the Lukaku. Yeah, he isn't that guy. Oh, we can't handle it. He handled it pretty well at Inter. He started the season handling it well. Something didn't go well. The interview was ill-informed and badly advised, and that didn't help. But there's still a top-class player in there, Rob, and it's Chelsea's job and Tuchel's job, having paid the money, to get it out of him.
Just in talking of big decisions, Rob, I think we can agree that Edouard Mendy in the game was sensational. When Mane went through to score it seemingly into an open goal... I didn't even know how physically. I don't know how it flicks off his hand when he's so low and the ball goes over the top. What do you think about him getting subbed out at the end? We've seen this before with
freak of nature. It's obviously predetermined. He obviously, whether accepts it but understands it, you know, Kepa's coming in, Pepe goes inside, has his warm up, probably looks through his notes of the penalty takers, blah, 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 all the preparation that goes now. And I'm not, this isn't hindsight, Rob, because it's easy to say. And we've watched the game not together today. You were at home, I was in the studio. So I watched the game. And as I'm happening, in my head, I'm thinking, bad decision, this. To me, it's a bad decision.
And I'll tell you why. I feel like it worked before.
No, okay. And just let me tell you why I think it's a bad decision. It's absolutely worked before. And I get the reason why you would do it. Let's say Tuchel's decided this is what they're going to do, based on the guy comes in, makes good save. So who does it affect when he comes in? This is what if you were here, I was going to say to you, who does this affect most? Does this affect Chelsea's confidence that we've got our guy now and he's going to save one, or does it affect Liverpool's confidence? Like, ooh, they've got their guy in there, and now it's even harder for us. Let's just say it's the Liverpool scenario. He's getting into the head of the Liverpool guys. The reality of what happened is he didn't save any and he got close to a couple. The reality of the game was, Rob, Mendy was like Superman in that goal. If Mendy's in that goal based on what he's done in the 120 minutes before, I'd be more worried that he's going to pull off a worldie somewhere. Because he's on one of those days.
I agree.
Way more than Kepa is going to maybe come up with one regular save or trying to get in the head of Liverpool players. Every Liverpool player, after they scored, almost looked at him to say, is that it? Is that what you've got? Because if I do what I do well, you're talking about top-class technicians, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Jota, Salah, Fabinho. I mean, they ain't giving him a chance.
I think, you know, it's tough to criticise something that's worked before.
Yeah, I'm not criticising.
I'm with you. I'm like, blimmin' out. You watch Mendy come off and you think, God, he's had such a stellar game. Mm. I mean, surely, you know, I mean, he's massive as well, by the way. So I know Kepa's a specialist, whatever. But I just think the confidence that he must have, the feeling of invincibility, the feeling that throughout that 120 minutes, Rob, that no one's going to get a ball past me. I think I want him in my goal for penalties.
Yeah, I 1,000,000% want him in my goal. And 1,000,000% would worry more with him in the goal if I'm the opposition than I would, oh, they brought the specialist on. Okay, well, I'll still take my penalty where I normally take it. Let's see if the specialist gets near it. I don't know. And listen, it's obviously conceived that it was going to happen. Both goalkeepers knew. Both keepers accepted. The rest of the team seemed to know about it. So absolutely. And if it works, it's brilliant from Tuchel. Because it doesn't work in Kepa, it's over the top. Yeah, I'm not criticising Tuchel. I'm just giving my football feel of what happened. And it's one of them, Rob. Let's just say you were Tuchel and you saw Mendy having that day. Do you think there's a part of you that should be able to say, Kepa, it's not today?
Well, that's the emotional side of it, right? And Tuchel, and you know, we stereotype certain coaches from certain countries, like it's everything's kind of pre-planned and this is what's going to happen. Mm. And again, I'm not super critical of it because it's worked before and whatever. They feel that's the best way of winning. But there's the emotional side of it, Rob, and the feeling side of it. And I say that about Tuchel. I wonder if Klopp would have... You know, you just sort of think, oh, he's having a day. He's having a day. And I think I'd want him out there at six feet five, I think it is, or 6'6", to continue to have such a great day. Let's switch it around to Liverpool, Rob, real quick, because Kevin Kelleher, what a game he had, by the way, the youngster. you can say, well, why isn't Alisson in goal? The number one goalkeeper. This is a major trophy that Liverpool and Klopp wants and needs to win. The fans are there. And by the way, what an amazing atmosphere. What an amazing final. Yeah. I mean, it was top class, superb stuff. And Kelleher, the young goalkeeper, had a brilliant game, made some great saves, many saves, does his thing, sticks his penalty away. I mean, another trophy for Klopp, Rob.
Yeah,
brilliant penalties. I've got to say, from all the players, apart from that last one from Kepa, of course, blasts it over the top.
Yeah,
but Liverpool's kind of not rise again, but this period of success under Jurgen Klopp with his team is in a great sweet spot the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah,
is continuing, and trophies help, and trophies are such great for the football club all around. My buddy from Massachusetts, flown with his son, you know, in that stadium to watch that, and I'm like, he's not replied. Obviously, not replied to me. I'm like, wow, enjoy that with your son in that environment to go and watch Liverpool. My goodness, that looked like a fun game to be at.
Yeah, I read a couple of articles actually last night ahead of the game and what it meant. And there was one of the journalists I thought made quite a valid point, was sort of saying, listen, we recognise how good Liverpool are, but the great teams and the great Liverpool teams kept winning trophies. And almost like that's what Klopp's got to do. So this group's remembered in that kind of similar vein that, you know, trophies, and they are getting that. And the Kelleher thing, I think, is quite interesting, Rob, because I think as much as, like you say, probably I would have gone Alisson because I think, well, we want to win the cup and that. He's getting this kid through some big moments as well, and he's getting to a point where if and when he has to rely on him, he's going to be ready, this young boy.
In any situation.
The back four, he's organising, he comes and punch. He's had a big moment today, scores the goal. You know, Kepa's goes over the top, and he's very much part of it within the group now, and that's hugely important. So, another good day for Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp in a League Cup to go with it. Now they'll concentrate on the Premier League and Champions League. For Chelsea, they're going to have to dust themselves down. Obviously, a bit of a shadow over the club at the moment. But you know, Thomas Tuchel's got to make sure he keeps a focus on the football and the important things that he can keep under his control, and then we'll wait and see what else comes on. Let's move it, mate, to Goodison Park, where we had a very good game, actually. I really enjoyed this one. Everton against Manchester City, an Everton team that were bang under pressure after a couple of poor results, and Frank Lampard very much under the spotlight against the Man City team. Just got beaten by Spurs and the gap down to three, and people saying it's just a little wobble. It was one of those games where I actually came away with a better feel of Everton from the game in terms of we've said, you know, about Frank and he said, I thought they had good energy, thought they played with intensity, thought they were well set up, thought they showed they were bright in Iwobi and Anthony Gordon in the wide areas. They created one or two chances. And I thought there's absolutely something to build on for Everton if they are going to get caught up in this relegation challenge.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the way that Everton came to play, Rob. You know, I think, and towards the end of the game, you see that, well, maybe not towards the end of the game, for large periods of the game, City had that same kind of control. I mean, watching Man City, Rob, when they're trying to find a winning goal, I feel like when I'm watching it, I've seen the same situation hundreds of times. I've never known a team that when you watch them, the rhythm, the flow of the game ends up being exactly what they want, it always happens. Possession, work around side, try and get in behind, go. I mean, but Everton, to be fair, in big parts of this game, went toe-to-toe, tried to play, counter-attacked, went forward, tried to press them, didn't just sit in and were defensive. And that and the way that it was so difficult for City to find a way through is credit to the way that they did that, because it's not easy to be expansive, to attack a team like City and still be strong defensively. Yeah. Michael Keane, I mean, listen, it's late. I'm sure he's exhausted. He couldn't move his feet.
No.
And Foden scores the winning goal there late in the game. We'll get on to talk about the incident in a second. It's just scary if you're an Everton fan. And I know there's plenty of things that scared Everton over the years, and particularly this season, where they are on the league table right now. Now, they've got games in hands on those above them.
Yeah.
You know, Leeds United, we'll talk about next. Brentford are falling like a stone as well. And I think, back to your reaction, if Everton have this kind of energy and this kind of ambition in games, I think they're going to be okay with the quality that they've got. But this is a very testing time for the club and for Frank Lampard, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. But again, you know, this was a game that quite easily could have been a draw. And I think we have to get to the point. And it's one of those where, first of all, Rob, as broadcasters, and obviously you weren't on the show today, we have to apologise to the Everton fans, because we were kind of given a bit of almost false information in terms of the goal situation. And I'll just quickly run through the scenario that we see. The incident with Rodri with the handball, the game's allowed to play on, and then the referee obviously is being told whether it was a handball or not by VAR, and then he points for an offside. So we're led to believe the offside has happened before the handball. So we don't even have to worry about the handball, because the offside is first. Then we write to the PGMOL, who's the Referees Association, for some clarification of the fact. And they said to us, well, actually, the referee didn't see the incidents with the handball now, which is fine, but why didn't the VAR tell him to go and have a look? But they were suggesting that the first offside that we thought was Richarlison wasn't. That was, he was onside. And there was an offside after the handball. That's why the game restarted with a free kick from there. So, bad communication through the VAR and PGMOL. Poor delivery from us in terms of giving out the wrong information, which we apologise for. And we did try and clear it up today, and just to prove the point. But the it doesn't take away from VAR not doing its job then, Rob. Because if Chris Kavanagh is in the VAR booth and is looking 5, 6, 7 times, it's taking 2 to 2.5 minutes of a ball that hits Rodri on his bicep, way below the line. It's the most clear penalty you'll ever see. And he doesn't ask Paul Tierney, the referee, to go over, knowing that they've said it's not, the first offside's not.
I know.
He doesn't ask the referee to at least go to the monitor. Let's have a look at this. He's already said, well, it's not a clear and obvious error. There's no evidence to overturn the decision. Is, I think, a shocking, shocking decision.
It is a shocking decision, Rob. It's funny, because I didn't see this game live. I met my son. It's his birthday, and I met him in down in the city. Of course, but I'm always on my phone, like, what's going on? Like, all this drama and stuff. So I'm like, okay, I'll take a look at it. And when I get home, of course, I watch the whole game later on the evening. And it's still hard to know when you look at it again what was going on and what the decision was and who was at fault. And we assumed that Richarlison was offside because of, I mean, you're absolutely right. You and I've watched the broadcast this morning, Rob, and it's great. You did a great job of actually that wasn't offside. That's the one on the far side, which looks super tight anyway.
It looks super tight anyway.
But you know, of the reaction of it, of Pedro Mel, I'm amazed. Not saying that they looked for ways out, but it would have been easier if they said, well, actually Richarlison was offside.
Yeah.
And still they said, well, actually he wasn't, which is fair enough if that's what they got, the angles, they got better angles than we've got. But it wasn't a clear and obvious error. What? I mean, that's the only thing that everybody agrees on. It was hit from the angles.
How can Chris Cavanagh, the referee, Rob, look at that, the number of times you see it, the angles you see it, and not even at the least ask the referee to come and look? And then here, let me tell you what is the most galling thing. Chris Cavanagh was working VAR today. He was working on the game today.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. And at some point, the PGMOL should be called out on this.
Well, they've admitted mistakes, Rob.
We know people make mistakes and things can be subjective. But when you're wrong, hold your hand up.
Yeah, it was a shocker. And the Everton fans, I can't imagine the frustration.
It's a point drop, Rob, and teams stay up or go down by points. It's a point in the, it's 3 points in the title race for Man City that they might not have got. And it's a point for Everton that they might have got that might, in at the end of the season, be crucial.
Mm. Yeah, but City did get the 3 points, gives them a little bit more breathing space. 6 points now, a couple of games in hand, isn't it? They have over them, or one game in hand now. They played the extra game because Liverpool played in the final. Yeah. But yeah, of course, critical for Manchester City, frustrating for Everton.
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
But yeah, but interesting. Anyway, next game, my friend, Leeds next United game, nil.
Big headline, my friend.
Leeds headlines everywhere.
Nil. Tottenham Hotspur 4. Always a focus on this game. Marcelo Bielsa after getting six past them by Liverpool. Antonio Conte after the kind of working with the best group 1 week. Am I the right man the next week? Taking his team. What emotional controls he going to show over the game? So two very emotional, big personality characters in the Premier League. So Leeds face Spurs, and Spurs do a job on Leeds, actually, Rob. Conte makes use and tactically sort of plays on the naivety of Leeds, draws the fullbacks in all over the place, leaves space for runners in, and then can see three in and ended up being four, three at half time, four in the end. And having conceded, was it 14 goals in the last three games? Pressure was on Bielsa and the Leeds ownership group as to what they were going to do about it.
Well, it's so interesting, Rob, and there's so much really to talk about. I mean, the game, I suppose, maybe is less important than the decision made afterwards.
Yeah.
All I know is that on my notes, my last line of my notes is Leeds owners might pull the trigger. My first line is Leeds are falling apart. You know, they've gone. There were no match for Spurs. I think we know the way that the manager was doing things. But the defensive side, of course, has been shocking. They've had a difficult run, by the way. If you look back at the fixtures,
they've played quite
a lot of tough games recently. Stuart Dallas had a chance late on to go through to give him a lifeline that was blocked. I mean, they created three good chances. It could have been Leeds 3, Spurs 9. It was that crazy a game. But the shot went up to Radrioni, the Leeds owner in the stand towards the end, Rob. And, you know, the camera then goes back down to Bielsa. Just finish on the game, Rob, for me, the fans, like, they were, or they are still, right behind him and the team.
Yeah.
They roared on that
incredible.
Team in the second half.
It's incredible.
Much more
Rob.
Spirited performance of Leeds United in the second part of the second half. They kept going back.
I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. That teams who are conceding as many goals as they are, sort of dropping as much as they are, being applauded and the support for the team and the manager. It's incredible. It's an incredible thing. And that's what sort of makes Leeds special. It's a special football club, Rob, you know, in many ways. But, as you said, it felt like there was a tough decision coming. And before it happened, and Rebecca asked me, I said, the tough decision is, do you cross your fingers and hope this guy can keep us 17th and stay in the league and maybe we take a breath and think again in the summer? Or do you make a really tough decision? And I went online last night because you try and get a feel of fans and things. And, you know, rumours were out. David Ornstein, our Premier League insider, was right over this, mate. By the time the whistle had gone, he said, big meeting at Leeds tonight. Bielsa's future in serious doubt. This was within seconds of the game. I mean, David's sources are category A plus. But my point was, Rob, I would say 70% of the Leeds fans and blogs and get feel around the Leeds Football Club would be prepared to go down with Bielsa than for him to be sacked. 70% I would say.
I read some stuff, Rob, saying that fans would prefer to watch Bielsa football in the Championship.
Yeah, yeah.
Than grinding away in the Premier League. Mm. I think, obviously, this is a massive, big, big call by the ownership and the director of football, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think, and I'll just speak honestly what I feel, I think it's a mistake. I think it's a mistake because when you look at the table and you look at what they need, they're going to need 4 wins. And this team has been built for whatever it is, 2 or 3 seasons now, to be this kind of end-to-end attacking athletic team. Mm. The goals aren't going to come from a centre-forward this season. Bamford's out. I'm not sure when he's going to come back. There's been decent numbers from the midfield players at Leeds United. The reason why they get decent numbers of goals is because they're allowed to run wild. And the downside, the risk of that, of course, is being open defensively. They've conceded a ton of goals. I get that. What I worry about, and the decision's been made, again, I think I tweeted out in the middle of the game, I still fancy Leeds to find those 4 wins. They're playing Wolves and Newcastle. They're playing winnable games, Rob. And with that spirit and with that kind of support from the crowd and the backing of the manager, I think or thought they could have done it. Now, Leeds after Bielsa. And by the way, if they'd got relegated, I'm not saying that Bielsa would have wanted to stay on, but he's done it. He's gotten promoted before when many, many, many others have not got them promoted. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether he'd have had the stomach to go back in the championship to do it all again, but he's proven somebody that could have done that. Not now. He's out.
Yeah.
I worry that Leeds United, and it might be Jesse Marsh, and I know he's a really good candidate. I worry that a more organised, a tradition or a, what's the word, a conventional coached Leeds is going to concede fewer goals. Granted. But they're still going to concede goals because those centre-backs particularly aren't good enough. They're still going to concede goals, Rob. And in that process to make them stronger, they're going to be less likely to score. Rafinha's going to be tracking back. Dan James Harrison's going to be doing the defensive side of things. Who's going to play up front? I question whether you can match that defensive organisational. It's like they're going to turn into Watford, are they? The new manager, Rob, I finished now. The new manager has got to find a way to still
retain,
utilize those attacking midfield players licensed to get forward and score. Because if they don't, and they're going to sit back and be defensively stronger and try and grind away to safety with what's been built and what's been learnt by these players, if the goals stop completely from the midfield players, which can totally happen if you're worried about shape, they're not going to win the 4 games. That's the call, and I'm telling you right now, if it would have been me, I would have stuck with what they had. He's not in a relegation spot right now. They're sinking like a stone, but they've had a really bad run of some fixtures coming up. You know, they beat West Ham a few weeks ago. But anyway, the decision's been made. We'll get a new manager. And the only way this is as any sort of happy ending, of course, is if A new guy comes in and keeps them up.
They've got to stay up, haven't they? Yeah.
They've got to stay up.
Yeah. It's interesting. So it's really interesting. It's a valid point. It's an interesting perspective because a couple of things on. Interesting. Speaking with Tim Howard this week, obviously he's on the show. Tim knows Jesse Marsh really well.
Right.
Got history with him, coached with him. He said been on some symposium with him, etc., etc. Now Jesse has been very much part of the Red Bull family, Salzburg
clubs,
New York, and Leipzig. Mm. So they've got a methodology, and he said their methodology actually is very close to Leeds. Front foot, tactically going and pressing the ball.
Nothing's close to Leeds. I'm not having it. Nothing's close to Leeds. Well, nothing's close to that man-to-man marking.
It's front foot. It's aggressive closing. It's structured. We said with a bit more structure, with less man-to-man mark. So you don't get centre-backs who go in and follow people wherever they go. So Tim's view was, and again, listen, I'm don't shoot the messenger. Tim's view was, this might be an interesting appointment. Somebody who isn't going to rip up what they've done before and try and turn them into Watford or, you know, a Roy Hodgson style where we'll get behind the ball or Pulis or Sam, but we'll continue to be who we are, but we'll change some of the other fundamentals in how we might defend or how we might pick up, et cetera, et cetera. So again, I just said, that's really interesting to him because that's as much as who they pick, the style of football that they play is important and the way they go about it. And let me just throw this one out there. If Pep Guardiola went into Leeds tomorrow, he's under pressure because of what Bielsa's done. This guy's been a hero. Well, again, I did a little bit of research. He's not just a hero for getting them up. He's not just a hero for the football they played to finish ninth last season. He's not for a hero that he built a gymnasium for the staff during the lockdown and that. He's out in the community, Rob. He meets people. He does stuff. People have said he's changed the city of Leeds, this guy, that he's more than just a football manager. And so that's what whoever's going to jump into this seat is going to have to contend with, the legend that is Bielsa that's gone before them, and they've got to find their way of adapting what Leeds do. My only other point I just wanted to make before I let you back in is, the ownership group who we know, and remember we've had some of the front office of the San Francisco 49ers who took a bigger piece, I think, of Leeds now. I would have thought as an owner, you would have to be sitting up after the game and thinking, what do I do?
I know.
My last point on this was, what do you think Bielsa? Is it part of Bielsa who might have said, if that's the way you want to go. Said mutual consent, and I think that's to preserve his reputation and all that he's done for the football club. But is there any part of Bielsa that might have said to, they've had a conversation, said, you might be right. It might be better that somebody else.
I don't think so, Rob. I don't think so. I think he wanted to see it through. I think it's a really, it is difficult, but it's a sad end. It's a sad way to end this relationship.
Sad end.
You know, after a man that's got so many, moralistically is so strong, and his honesty and the way that he talks and the way that he coaches. Remember that game where he thought a goal, they benefited from a goal, and he let the other team, was it Nottingham Forest?
Not Forest,
go through and score to equal. So, when I read about the fan saying I heard a fan on the radio saying I'd rather watch Bielsa's football has been spectacular for the team and to get them in the Premier League. But we also understand the ownership's point of view and feeling they've got to do everything they can to stay in the league. So we will see. We will see. They'll make an appointment. They need to make it immediately. I'm sure it's going to be Jesse Marsh, Rob. Fascinating. Earn this right, this opportunity to coach at this level. What a club. What a size of a job it is. Wow. So fascinating. But just quickly on Spurs, Rob. Just quickly on Spurs. And I mean, we could talk all day about some of these stories. Mm-hmm. Antonio Conte goes from exhilaration to crying, almost moaning and groaning about what his team are like and how bad they are and it's impossible. So then a situation where they win 4-0 and some of the players look really, really good. I wish he just, stop the crazy highs and lows and get on making your team better. You've got some decent players to work with there. They showed it in this game. Kane, Doherty's goal, his young son, the ball from Kane to Son, everything else was fantastic. And I'll get to my underappreciated performer, Dejan Kulusevski. This young player that's come into the team on that right-hand side is underappreciated right now from what he can bring. And we didn't see a ton of him before he joined the club. Mm. I think he's joined on loan with a view to a permanent. I think there's a fee ready to I think he's still only 21 years of age. I think he's super young. What a good player he looks like, Rob. Mm. What a good player he looks like in all regards, in defensive work, in being confident, sticks his chest out, really good with that left foot, tying things together, scores a brilliant goal in this game against Leeds United, almost scored an identical one a little later, comes inside on that left foot. I just think that that's a really good pickup and has made the team better. He's on that right-hand side, Rob, in the front three, where it's always been Lucas Moura with his pace, etc. And now Kulusevski looks like he's super comfortable at this level. Isn't it funny, Rob? Some players come to this league and take such a long time to settle in and do their thing. I mean, he looks like he's ready-made for the Premier League with the way it's physical and quick and the quality that he shows.
You get Havertz and you get a Werner who come in and it's taken them a while. I mean, you probably wouldn't say either of them have quite settled yet. This kid, like you say, two or three games already looks like. He knows his position. He's really, really good. Knows where to be, blocks off balls, gets forward, lovely left foot, nice combination play with the front players.
Good. Good decisions. He makes good decisions. He's got good quality.
Good shout. Big future ahead of him, I think, for Spurs. Yeah. It seems like a really good pickup for them. Let's move it to Old Trafford, my friend, where Manchester United were expected, I think, to get 3 points against a Watford team that have struggled. That Crystal Palace put 4 goals past in midweek. But it was a bit like a return to the bad old days of United dominate possession, couldn't take chances. I think I had 22 shots in the end. Frustrating day for the likes of Ronaldo, Bruno and others. United, if they're going to get there, Rob, it's just going to be a roller coaster ride, isn't it, if they're going to hang on to fourth. I don't think this group are going to be able to show the consistency that's going to be required to be sure of finishing that fourth spot.
Not to be sure, Rob, but I still think they can do it. I still think they can do it.
Favorites?
And it's interesting. I think probably Arsenal, the bookmakers, would be favourites. I predicted United back in
Boxing Day. I did, but I'm getting a little bit worried.
Well, I'm not changing now. I think there's still enough there. Interesting, Rob, in this game, the build-up to this game, Ronaldo talked about wanting a striking partner, that it might be good to play two up front. Ooh. But that coincided with Pogba's back in form and Bruno Fernandes meant they did go back to the 4-2-2-2, my friend, in this game. I looked at it closely. I thought, that's how they started this game. You had Bruno Fernandes and Paul Pogba tucked in as those wide players, making the extra two. And you had Elanga playing up front with Ronaldo. Now, through the game, of course, they created some stuff. They didn't take chances. Elanga had a great chance early on. Poor finishing, Rob, is what's hurting the team. Mm. Defensively, I mean, I know it's only Watford, but no real issues. They did a pretty good job of being compact, working well without the ball.
Maguire on the bench, interestingly. I don't know if that was resting or didn't know why, but interesting.
I like that. I like Lindelof and Varane in those positions. And through the game, Rob, I mean, you can't say that Ralf Rangnick doesn't change things. He went, so of course I'm a geeky with this stuff, aren't I? He then went to 4-2-3-1 with a change of some subs, and then he went to 4-3-3. And then he went back something else, and he had Bruno with Pogba, and he had Rashford and Elanga and Ronaldo.
He chucked them all on, didn't he?
Sancho. I mean, he, in that, you know, sometimes managers, you know, we moan about, like, don't make enough changes. Well, he does. Yeah. Yeah. And I just think it's a bad result for United at home against Watford. It's a bad result. But again, it's just the final piece, Rob, that's letting them down, because I think some of the build-up play, some of the creative players doing their thing, it's just they're not creating, I guess. I mean, you can say this poor finishing of individuals. Maybe they're not creating good enough chances. I don't know. But they should have won this game with the chances that they had. Yeah. I mean, wow. Like, there's, was it 20-odd shots or something again? And they're just not scoring. Ronaldo had a bit of a nightmare game, couldn't finish without opportunities. As I said, Elanga had a couple of really good opportunities. It's just not getting the job done in the final third which is what you'd expect that they've got, the some of the names they've got, you'd think that's where they should kind of excel, but they're just not doing it at the moment. But it's not for the manager's lack of trying to throw every option of systems and attackers to make it happen.
No, I don't think that'd ever be anything. Lack of trying with Ralf Rangnick. He's obviously one of them who likes to go to work, likes to coach, likes to bring his tactics, and hopefully his team can employ them when they play. Tell you one thing that's starting to irk with me, Rob. The Ronaldo face every now and then, or the face at the end of the game. It's starting just to, okay, we know you're the GOAT, we know that, but, you know, stop that. It's not helping anyone. Body language and giving out messages, and I've never liked that, as you know, with teammates who play to the crowd and pull the face and get in the camera. Just get on and put the ball in the back. And that's what you've done brilliantly throughout your career, and that's what will help Manchester.
Is that still the problem position? And I say that with respect to Ronaldo. He scored some brilliant goals. He's been the attacker, top goal scorer,
One in his last 10, though, Rob.
Yeah. I know, it's just like, it's still feel that Manchester United...
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's talk this, you know, possibly him leaving in there if he wants to have a chance to go back and play Champions League football or something. I read recently that he might have the option to be able to leave or this or that. I mean, centre forward position, I know Cavani's there, but he's probably, you know, with age, going to be moving on as well. We're not sure if they've got that 20-goal striker, have we?
Well, that's right. If there's one, well, there's a load of clubs that want Erling Haaland, Rob, from Borussia Dortmund. Man United could do with him. Man United could do with Harry Kane. Man United could do with, they could do with a, I don't know, just a almost proven scorer. I mean, Ronaldo's been a proven scorer, but this striking position, his age right now, it's just, and I know he's done great, and I know the United fans love him.
Yeah, he's great.
But there's got to be, the United fans want a new, exciting, younger striker to get behind, and for the other young attacking players, and your Brunos and others, whoever's going to be there, can link with. So, I mean, when you're 0-0 against Watford, you've got to look at the attacking players and what they've done. And that was a disappointing part for me, where the general play was pretty good. Yeah. It's just that last little detail wasn't up to the level you'd expect.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Okay, mate, we'll start to wrap it up. Yeah. Let's go to London Stadium, West Ham United versus Wolves. Two teams still with a hope of trying to take that fourth spot. Wolves obviously coming off the 2-1 defeat late against Arsenal midweek, which was no doubt draining physically and emotionally. It was a free week for West Ham. David Moyes, before the game, Robin said, I want to see my team stop sort of struggling and to win games and get back on top and be a little bit more front foot and possession based and a little bit more exciting to watch. I'm not sure they were quite that in the end, but probably the better team, a bit more energetic. I didn't think they were great up front. Looked a little bit flat in the front areas of the pitch. Mikel Antonio is going through a little bit of a tough time for him. I think it's 2 goals in 17 now in the Premier League, something like that. So not quite firing for him. But they got the job done, Rob. They got the goal. Tomáš Souček, who was important last season, got 10 goals last season, gets his fourth today on his birthday, which was great for him. And in the end, it was enough to get all 3 points and keep them in the race. Well, they're 2 points behind Manchester United now, same games played.
Yeah, I disappointed with the game, actually. Disappointed. I thought the first half was, wasn't much of a game. Second half, I think West Ham definitely stepped up a little bit. And I know Mikel Antonio came off later, Rob, subbed off later in the game and got a really nice ovation from the crowd.
Yeah.
But he's just, I mean, looks a little bit tired, Rob, or he's just not the same kind of real threat that we saw earlier in the season. I mean, he still works hard and he'll still do his thing and he's a nuisance for defensive and of course he's got the talent, the ability and everything else. It's just he doesn't look like, I don't know, did well for the goal. I get that. Of course, an important 3 points for West Ham. And at this point in the season, I think this is Moyes going to be grinding now. He's going to be grinding now because you aren't going to see the slick and the silky at this point. It's been a long season. They've had a brilliant, brilliant season that they've had. Yeah. Are they playing with the same kind of verve and the same sparkle? Mm. They're not. But Wolves are a tough team defensively, yeah. You know, and they got the job done. So well done, West Ham. Still in there fighting for that top four. But Mikel Antona, can he go again, Rob? Can he kind of, I don't know, bring some real quality to that attack and start scoring more goals? Bowen is doing such an amazing job and is a really key goal for Thomas Suchek today. But yeah, a win, but not one of the best games of the weekend.
Just want to quick mention as well. I just want to mention, I think I did on the book as well. Declan Rice, by the way, Rob, is an absolute dream. 23 years of age, mature, can play, is getting forward, is starting to look a bigger goal threat. The way he conducts himself, the interviews after, holding the Yarmolenko shirt. I mean, proper top class.
We've said it. How long have we been saying
proper,
that for?
Proper, mate, proper. But the more impressed you get. You know, is a young player today who's got everything. As part of the England setup, he's got everything you need in the modern game, but humble and good with his teammates. And just thought we should, you know, we're picked to criticise some players in certain situations. I think we should be just as quick to admire somebody like Declan Rice, who's a model pro and a brilliant asset for West Ham United.
And a valuable one. They're talking about £120 million, maybe.
Yeah, which somebody would have to spend if they're going to take him from West Ham. Let's get to the other results, mate. And there was a important game in West London. Brentford hosting Newcastle. So, chinted Brentford on the slide. Newcastle going in the other direction. Two goals early from in the first half. Joe Ellington with a beautiful header.
Good header.
And then he runs a length of the pitch to celebrate. I thought it was brilliant. And that's a player who's had his criticism over the time. And fair play to him and to Eddie Howe, what he's doing. Joe Willock gets his second goal. He's starting to score all of a sudden. Look more like the player we saw last season. And in the end, the two goals first half were enough. And the points went to Newcastle and the plaudits go to Eddie Howe. But I have to, at this point, say my underappreciated player of the week was the moment that Christian Eriksen, who we know has joined Brentford, returned back to Premier League football. And I think we all can remember 8 months ago, Rob, when he was playing for the Danish national team and the scenes of his teammates surrounding him and on the pitch and people in tears and emotions and all the drama that was going on. And you know, apparently he'd come out and said that, you know, for nearly 5 minutes, his heart stopped. And at that time, I think we're thinking, you know, please God, everything be okay for him and be healthy. But to see him back on a football pitch, the ovation he got from both sets of fans, his family were there, he said his mother had travelled to come. I just thought was one of the great moments of the weekend in a time when we were having difficult times all over the world and issues going on in football. But I just thought that was a really bright moment, Christian Eriksen turning back to Premier League football for Brentford.
It's a great shout, and it's a nice kind of just an appreciation of an amazing footballer, an amazing footballer. Now he's basically shown us he's an amazing human being.
Yeah.
After going through what he went through, to be as hungry and as determined to get back playing at the top level again is admirable. And you're right. I mean, of all the stuff that's going on right now, wow, we need some kind of good news stories. And that really is one. So it's a good shout, Christian Eriksen. Yeah. Not enough to get the points on the day. Newcastle United are doing what, cool, I think some of us thought they might and go on a run. Yeah. Four wins out of the last five, then get
I wasn't so sure, I got to be honest, Rob. Yeah. I mean, what, they're 14th now, 25 points and looking upwards. I wasn't so sure they could put, I thought the win will come, the draw, the loss. I thought it would still be a bit patchy, but fair play to Eddie Howe. He's done a really good job and they're looking upwardly mobile. Just for you, the other results, Crystal Palace 1, Burnley 1, Palace 1-0 up. And Burnley come back to it courtesy of an own goal. Sean Dyche and his team just picking up points, Rob, just continuing to keep a little bit of momentum going, Burnley.
Well, they are, and I'm looking at the league table now. You know, Burnley's still got it on. They've got a couple of games in hand on two new teams that we've, I mean, this is kind of relegation chat now, Rob, but Brentford and Leeds are really in trouble. They're really in trouble. Brentford are on 24 points. Leeds are on 23. And it's so funny, isn't it? I remember a few months ago thinking Brentford going to be okay.
Brentford will be fine.
But what they got up front, the energy, the manager, they got to find a way of going again. And Leeds United, we've talked about them. They've got to find a way of stopping this awful decline and try and find a way out of it. But they and Everton are now into it. Because with Burnley and the front players just starting to click a little bit. Only one goal, of course, against Palace. But you feel that they're on a bit of a run. I think Watford and Norwich are going to have too much on. I do. And Norwich, just going through their result, Norwich got not lost out of Southampton away.
Friday night game 2-0.
Yeah. Southampton's continue. They're in the top 10 now, Southampton. So
yeah, really going nicely.
Norwich are going to struggle. Brighton nil, Villa 2. Rob is another result. I'm just going through some of these other results.
Yeah, big one for Stevie G. First win in 7,
it.
Was it?
Needed it a little bit. Yeah, needed it a little bit. But yeah, but the bottom of the table, I think what's great about it is where we look at the table now, Rob, is that in all areas, it's going to be a fun watch.
Race, top four, bottom.
Everywhere. Yeah, championship.
Could go right to the last game of the season, couldn't it? You see all those, the four teams vying for fourth space. There's the title race. Those two aren't going to lose too many games. And six teams down at the bottom might just be fighting out. So we could be in for a bumper end to the season. Listen, mate, it's the end of the podcast. A busy one at that. What a weekend in the Premier League. Leeds lose to Spurs and then Bielsa loses his job. United draw blank with Watford and lose a bit of grip on fourth spot. Man City find a way to win 1-0 against Everton despite them having a stonewall penalty not given. And just to add a little bit of drama, Roman Abramovich hands stewardship of Chelsea Football Club to the trustees, who apparently are not sure they want it, as spotlight falls on the Russian owner. Oh, and Liverpool, they won the League Cup at Wembley today after a really lengthy penalty shootout, and Kepa coming on to save penalties and actually misses the one that gives Liverpool the cup. It was that kind of weekend. Listen, we'll be back on Thursday, March the 3rd. We're going to review the fifth round of the FA Cup that's happening midweek, and then we'll look ahead to match week 28 when there's a big game in Manchester at the Etihad, City versus United. But for now, I'm Earl, he's Musty. Together with the two Robbies, thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. I'm going to go sit in a dark room and give my head a rest. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.